It is Friday, April 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the United States strikes a Syrian airbase following this week's apparent chemical weapons attack. Russia condemns the U.S. military action.
Russian officials have launched a barrage of criticisms, calling it an act of aggression against a sovereign state.
And a new film explores life during the Battle of Britain in World War II. It's all ahead. The U.S. military fired a barrage of missiles into Syria early Friday in retaliation for a chemical weapons attack blamed on President Bashar al-Assad's forces that killed about 100 civilians. VOA White House correspondent Peter Heinlein tells me about the scale of the U.S. attack.
Well, sir, it appears that this is just a one-off attack. The administration officials who've been briefing people down at the Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida, where the president is meeting with the Chinese President Xi Jinping, say that this is just something that's meant to be a message to Bashar al-Assad, the Syrian president, that this kind of behavior is intolerable. Now, that said, we have to see what Bashar al-Assad's response and what Russia's response is. At the moment, we're hoping that we can have a diplomatic dialogue at the UN Security Council. Russia is quite upset and has made some very strong statements condemning this, as has Syria. And so we'll see what the diplomatic fallout is.
So this U.S. strike, this was in response to the attack earlier this week, the apparent chemical attack in Idlib in northern Syria.
Yes, we say apparent because we still can't be 100% sure, but U.S. officials are 99% sure that this chemical weapons attack, which violates international conventions and violates some assurances that Syria gave that it wouldn't, that it would abandon such weapons after a 2013 incident in which a number of people were killed. Yes, this was the genesis of the attack, and it was swift, and according to administration officials, it was just planned as a one-shot deal.
Yeah, because earlier President Trump, during his presidential campaign, warned against the U.S. getting involved in the Syrian civil war.
That's correct. I wanted to add, though, a one-shot deal aimed at the facility where intelligence officials believe the planes took off to make that, to stage that chemical weapons attack.
President Trump at the moment is in Florida meeting, as you were saying, with Chinese President Xi Jinping. What kind of an impact will this U.S. strike on Syria have on those talks?
Well, so far the talks are going very smoothly. According to our correspondent, Steve Herman, who's on the scene, he's been reporting back regularly, and the talks are going on in a very polite and collegial atmosphere. So far, according to what we hear from the president, he hasn't gotten much in his negotiations. He considers himself a great negotiator and is hoping for a quick win on trade with China. But the Chinese, of course, look at this in the long picture. And they are looking for a win-win type, you know, a statement at the end of the summit that talks about win-win and cooperation for the long term. So there may be conflicting priorities here, with the Chinese looking at the broad picture, you know, down the road, years and years, establishing a solid relationship between the two, while President Trump is interested in a couple of quick wins on things that he thinks are important and which would fulfill campaign promises that he made.
Thanks very much. That's White House correspondent Peter Heinlein. Well, meanwhile, the Syrian government's ally Russia condemned the U.S. military action. I spoke with VOA Moscow correspondent Daniel Scharf about the reaction from the Russian capital.
Russian officials have launched a barrage of criticisms, calling it an act of aggression against a sovereign state, violation of international law, and maintaining that it was carried out under false pretenses. Russia and Syria both say that the reason given by the U.S. that Syria was launching chemical weapons that were used on Tuesday in Idlib province, killing close to 100 civilians, came from that base, that they actually delivered the weapons from that base and traced them back there. And that's why the U.S. says it launched this attack. Russia and Syria say that there was no such attack, that the chemical weapons that were people were affected by in that province were stored in a warehouse by rebels and just happened to get dispersed when the Syrian military was attacking the rebels. So it was an inadvertent, accidental thing, not a deliberate attack by chemical weapons used by the regime. That's according to Damascus and Moscow.
Now, the Russians were informed by the U.S. before the U.S. missile attack against Syria began.
Yeah, that's right. And that's one of the more interesting aspects of what's been coming out from this attack. The Kremlin said very clearly today that, yes, they were notified in advance that this was going to take place. And despite the fact that Russia has anti-missile defense systems located inside Syria, there was no attempt to knock down the U.S. missiles that we know of. There was no attempt that we know of to warn the Syrian side so that they could take some kind of action that we know of. None of that's been reported. And even some reports coming out from the area by journalists who are on the ground indicate that the Russians evacuated their people from the area hours before the attack took place, but the Syrian jets were still attacked. Facilities were still destroyed. They could have moved some of that equipment if they were notified by the Russians, but Moscow chose not to do that for some reason, which is quite interesting. It may also indicate, you know, just how far their support for the Assad regime goes. They're willing to only go so far, apparently. They didn't, inform their supposed ally when they found out so that they could hide some of their jets that were destroyed. It could have been worse, though. We also understand from journalists on the ground that some planes survived the attack. The Russian military is also claiming that something like half of the U.S. cruise missiles actually landed on target. So they're trying to denigrate the effectiveness of the U.S. Campaign at the same time as saying that this could seriously negatively affect U.S.-Russia relations, which are already, as we know, at a pretty low level. But this also comes just days ahead of the highest level visit by a U.S. official to Moscow in years. U.S. Secretary of State Tillerson is scheduled to arrive Tuesday evening, we believe, here in Moscow and have direct talks with Russian officials on Wednesday. So certainly with these tensions in the air, those talks are going to be watched a lot more closely.
Yeah, and actually on Thursday, Secretary Tillerson warned Russia to carefully consider its continued support for the Assad government.
Secretary Tillerson has had some very strong comments recently. Not only has he told Moscow that they should really reconsider their support, he's also said that Russia is complicit in the attack that took place on Tuesday, the chemical weapons that killed so many civilians. He had some very strong words, calling them either complicit or unable to do what they should be doing in Syria with their ally in Damascus, getting rid of these chemical weapons, as Russia said that they had done years ago. Now, it's of course been reported that there have been chemical weapons used in Syria in the past, and certainly there's going to be a lot more attention on this issue and, whether or not it's possible that some of the fighting groups may have gotten a hold of some Syrian chemical weapons. These are all issues that are being looked into. But the U.S. has been very clear, and Western allies also very clear. They believe very strongly that the Assad regime was behind this and that Russia is effectively covering up for a really terrible attack on civilians that had a very large number of casualties.
That's VOA Moscow correspondent Daniel Scharf. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what kind of reaction has this U.S. military strike on Syria received?
It's all over the board. We're seeing this hashtag Syria strikes, and as people are using that on social media, we're seeing concern from some about this developing into a ground war with U.S. troops getting involved. Some people saying this is the start of World War III. But then you have a lot of people praising President Trump for taking action, and with that, criticizing President Obama for not taking action during his presidency. Many of those tweets tinged with political partisanship, as I'm sure is no surprise to hear that. But a lot of back and forth and a lot of digging on social media back to some statements that President Trump made back in 2013 and 2014, where he issued a number of tweets where he said, Syria is not our problem. We need to stay out of Syria. What will we get for our lives and our money? Zero. And said, if you do not attack Syria, if you do, many bad things will happen. And from that fight, the U.S. gets nothing. So a lot of people calling back these tweets from 3 or 4 years ago and saying how President Trump has shifted his position from what he thought then.
Yeah. And other things trending?
Yeah. The other big story, as we were talking about, there's so much news going on that some of these stories are getting buried. But the other big story trending is this attack in Sweden, at least 3 people dead after a truck drives into a crowd. We saw, of course, the initial images of the truck spreading on social media, video shot from a high-rise building that appears to show people running in the immediate aftermath away from the scene. Many people calling it a terrorist attack even before it was declared so by the Swedish Prime Minister a short time ago. And again, going back to U.S. politics, a lot of people pointing out President Trump's words from about a month ago where he seemed to reference an attack in Sweden that hadn't happened. People now noting that there has been an attack in Sweden and that his words, even though at the time there wasn't when he spoke them, they've come to fruition and it shows some of the issues that they're having with refugees. So even though it's an international incident, it's still imbued with U.S. politics.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. President Trump says tremendous progress has been made with Chinese President Xi Jinping. The U.S. unemployment rate falls, but the economy gains just 98,000 jobs. Norway and China restore diplomatic ties after a brief tiff. And as we heard, a truck crashes into a Swedish shopping center. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOANews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Debate continues over the impact of the split of the UK from the European Union, known as Brexit. But this isn't the first time Britain separated from Europe. Scientists say that when Earth was in the midst of an ice age some 450,000 years ago, the English Channel, which today separates Great Britain from France, was dry land. A new study is providing evidence that Great Britain was physically separated from France in 2 stages. First, they found that a lake which formed in front of a retreating ice sheet as it melted overflowed a natural dam-like structure that ran between the 2 countries along the Dover Strait. The spill was followed by what was described as a catastrophic mega-flood, which caused the structure to eventually fail, allowing even more water to flow into the English Channel. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a new film looks at efforts to boost morale during the Second World War in Britain. The Trump White House and congressional Republicans have resumed efforts aimed at agreeing on a replacement for President Barack Obama's signature health care law. Last month's failure to pass a health care law exposed some real divisions among Republicans in Washington. But any attempt by President Trump to reach out to opposition Democrats is also risky. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone in Washington has more on Trump's complicated political challenge.
The effort to revive the health care bill is being led by Vice President Mike Pence. It's a key test for President Trump, who abandoned his first effort on health care when conservative lawmakers refused to support the bill.
They're friends of mine. I'm disappointed because we could have had it. So I'm disappointed.
Trump later blasted congressional conservatives via Twitter and vowed to fight them in next year's midterm elections. Trump has also raised the possibility of turning to Democrats if some Republicans continue to oppose him.
If they got together with us and got a real health care bill, I'd be totally open to it, and I think that's going to happen.
But Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer is skeptical.
So Trump is going to have problems until he learns that the only way to get things done in this place, even though he has the majority in the House and Senate, is in a bipartisan way. If he doesn't, his presidency will be a disaster.
Conservatives insist they will stick to their principle of minimal government involvement in health care, no matter what pressure comes from the president. says about Republican Congressman Mark Sanford.
Do we need to lower the bar in what we believe as conservatives simply because a Republican is now in the White House?
Trump's focus on catering to his political base and working around Democrats could limit his success, says analyst William Galston.
Mr. Trump's problem was that he started off with a divided electorate and relatively low approval ratings, and they have bumped up and down, but appear to be on a downward path now, and this will make his job of governing more difficult.
Conservatives could also limit Trump's ability to work with Democrats, says Republican strategist John Fury.
This is going to be a challenge for him. If he makes the Democrats the enemy, it's going to be very difficult for him to get anything done.
Even as Trump hopes to revive the health care effort, he finds himself walking a fine line between pleasing his conservative base and reaching out to moderate Republicans and perhaps even some Democrats. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is International Edition. A new film looks at some of the women behind the morale-boosting films shown to Britons during the Blitz in World War II. As David Byrd tells us, Their Finest tells the story of a woman screenwriter and how she breaks through in the male-dominated film industry.
Gemma Arterton plays Catherine Cole, who is hired by the British government to write female dialogue for a propaganda film intended to boost morale during the Blitz in London. Catherine finds that she actually has a talent for writing, but has to get past the sexism of her time. Gemma Arterton says setting the story in World War II serves as a great backdrop for Catherine's struggle for equality.
And one of the first things that she's told is that obviously she can't be paid as much as the men, and she just accepts that, of course. And, you know, as time goes on, I think she realizes that she's actually got something to say and is actually quite clever and talented and, dare they say, better at her job than some of the others. And so she sort of has, as the film progresses, she learns about herself and gains in confidence and realizes that her worth is not from the relationship she's in, but from herself.
This is Rose and Lily's story, and you won't let them do anything.
They go to Dunkirk.
And Johnny pilots them home.
They're girls. Girls don't want to be the hero. They want to have the hero. They want to be had by him.
Tom, Cap.
And if that ginger viper so much as gets her nose through the office door while we're out, you're sacked. And don't think I won't know. I can smell her shaving cream on the wind.
Anything else?
Since you're so keen to flex your femininity, you can tie me up!
One of the roadblocks Catherine faces is the prima donna acting of one of her actors, Ambrose Hillard, played by British veteran Bill Nighy. Nighy says his struggle was to make Ambrose believable and not just over the top in everything.
But it's there's this kind of different, it's different if you put it in a movie. Sometimes it seems too much. So yeah, you try and tread a delicate line between caricature and what might be considered to be real. But it's a great role, you know. I mean, and it's quite good to play somebody as pompous and as self-absorbed as that.
Ambrose undergoes a transformation in the film after Catherine talks to him about the purpose of the movies they are making.
It's about respect for the art and for the artists. And it makes me think how wrong we've been playing Uncle Frank for laughs. Yes, he's a drunkard and a clown, but he's also all those people who gave their sons to one war and now their grandsons to another. If we served that truth, if we gave you an Uncle Frank really worth your time and your talent, I wonder if you would consider putting that same time and talent towards helping Mr. Lundbeck.
Gemma Arterton says all of the characters are transformed as they work together to boost their nation's morale in a time of war.
It's about integrity, artistic integrity, and it's about being listening to yourself and finding the confidence to do what you really want to do in times of really difficult, in dire times, and being dusting yourself off and getting on with it.
Bill Nighy says the film has a lot to say to modern audiences.
But I think this is a very timely movie because it shows how, in difficult times, people can combine with compassion and with courage and look after one another and concentrate less on what divides them than on what unifies them.
Their Finest also stars Oscar winner Jeremy Irons, Sam Claflin, Jack Huston, and Richard E. Grant. It is directed by Danish director Lorna Scheffig and is rated R for some language and sexuality. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Thanks very much, David. That is our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us and have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States recently imposed sanctions on 30 foreign entities and individuals in 10 countries, pursuant to the Iran, North Korea, and Syria Non-Proliferation Act. These sanctions will be in effect for 2 years, do not apply to these individuals and entities' respective countries or governments, and are fully consistent with U.S. commitments under the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action with Iran. A group of 11 entities and individuals were sanctioned for transfers of sensitive items to Iran's ballistic missile program. There are indications that Iran is providing missile support to the Houthis in Yemen. This destabilizing activity only serves to escalate regional conflicts further and poses a significant threat to regional security. The United States will continue to take steps to address Iran's missile development and production and sanction entities and individuals involved in supporting these programs under U.S. law. An additional 19 foreign entities and individuals were sanctioned under the Iran, North Korea, and Syria Non-Proliferation Act. They were sanctioned due to credible information indicating they had transferred to or acquired from Iran, North Korea, or Syria goods, services, or technology listed on multilateral export control lists or on U.S. national control lists or other items that could make a material contribution to the development of weapons of mass destruction or missile proliferation. The following restrictions have gone into effect on the sanctioned individuals and entities as of March 21st. No department or agency of the U.S. government may procure or contract for any goods, services, or technology from the designated entities, except to the extent the Secretary of State otherwise may determine. The designated entities are ineligible for any assistance program of the U.S. government, except to the extent the Secretary of State otherwise may determine. U.S. government sales of any item on the U.S. munitions list to these entities are prohibited, and sales of any defense articles, defense services, or design and construction services controlled under the Arms Export Control Act are terminated, and new licenses will be denied, and any existing licenses suspended for transfers of export-controlled items. These sanctions demonstrate the United States' continued commitment to nonproliferation and the promotion of global stability and security.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.